from KQED.
From KQED News, I'm Andrea Kissick with Quest, our weekly series exploring Northern California's science and environment. If you've ever spent time in Silicon Valley or among high-tech entrepreneurs, you may have heard the term Valley of Death. It's used to describe the huge gulf that can exist between coming up with a new idea and getting a product to market. Well, this is a real problem in hospitals, too, especially, as KQED's Amy Standen reports, when it comes to kids.
The neonatal intensive care unit at UC San Francisco is a warm and hushed place. Marty Thompson's been a nurse here for 13 years. She's swaddling a baby boy just a little bit bigger than a burrito.
You're a knucklehead.
Some of these babies were born prematurely. Others were born with congenital defects, some part of their internal anatomy that just didn't develop the way it's supposed to.
Their diaphragm missing and part of their intestines in their chest, or some cardiac defect that needs to be fixed because there's no way they would be able to grow and sustain a life without having the surgery.
In other words, what Sanjeev Dutta calls
plumbing problems, essentially.
Dutta is a pediatric surgeon, which means it's his job to fix exactly these kinds of problems. He works at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital in Menlo Park. But Dutta says that often the instruments he uses when he does these surgeries weren't built for tiny babies. They were made for adults.
So we sort of struggle with instruments that were never designed for the type of patient that we're operating on, and we adapt.
Dutta says the issue here isn't really safety. Most of these surgeries are, by now, pretty routine. But pediatric surgeons have to improvise in ways that other surgeons don't. And physically, sometimes that's pretty awkward.
Really, I have to stand about a foot and a half away from the patient in order to just do the operation because the instrument's so big.
Partly because of problems like these, pediatric surgeons have a reputation as being mavericks, people who are particularly good at improvising. And no one fits that mold as well as Mike Harrison at UCSF. Harrison is known as the father of fetal surgery, that is, working on the smallest patients of all, those still in the womb. He says 20 years ago, when his field was just getting started, his team had to make almost everything from scratch.
We had to make up all the tools and devices that allowed the fetal surgery, that is the stuff on the mom and the uterus and opening and closing the uterus. All that stuff we had to make up because those tools were 10 times too big.
Harrison describes this era, the 1970s and the early 80s, as a sort of golden age of pediatric surgery, a time when you could rig up a new tool, run your own tests on animal models if necessary, and then bring it into the operating room. He says he never felt like they had a choice.
It's almost a moral imperative because it's usually in the circumstance where this kid is going to die. The only way we think we might be able to save him is this new way. We'd have to have this new thing. Let's just go do it. And that's what we can't do now.
That's because things have changed. In the late 1970s, the FDA began regulating surgical devices, much the same way it regulates drugs. It can now take a decade to get a device through the regulatory process, longer for pediatrics. Harrison says this, along with the fact that these procedures are really pretty rare, has had a chilling effect on manufacturers.
The market is too small to justify the research and development for new devices. That's the fundamental problem.
That's why in 2007, in an effort to help spur innovation in this field, Congress set aside a small pot of money that's administered through the FDA's Office of Orphan Products. It's about $2 million every 2 years that gets split among several different teams. The idea here is to bring together doctors and engineers to work on problems in pediatric surgery. And this is sort of an odd combination, says Harrison, because if you think about it, surgeons and engineers, they come from two very different worlds.
We were, you know, sort of blood and guts, and hey, we got to have a device. This kid going to the operating room tomorrow. And they were thinking nanotechnology and science and PhDs.
But the FDA is making these partnerships routine, both at UCSF, which has received about $1 million since 2009, and on the peninsula, where Sanjeev Dutta has paired up with an engineer named Pablo Garcia.
Oh, these are all racks of screws. And
Garcia works at SRI International, which is a research firm in Menlo Park. In 2009, he and Sanjeev Dutta received $500,000 to fund their collaboration.
Do you want to do this, Sanjeev?
No, you go ahead.
Garcia and Dutta are standing around a table in Garcia's engineering lab, rifling through a pile of metal gadgets. These are prototypes.
This is a sort of a favorite tool of mine.
On one end is a plastic grip, kind of like what you'd see on a paint roller, and it's attached to a thin metal tube with a tiny clamp at the other end. This is designed to treat a condition called esophageal atresia,
where the esophagus has a gap in it. The child is born with a gap in that tube and so therefore can't eat.
This condition is treatable, but the surgery is complex and often invasive. This tool is designed to make it much easier so that kids recover faster and with less scarring. Dutta says he knows, from the perspective of a device manufacturer, that the commercial market for something like this is pretty limited.
Eyes glaze over if they hear, oh, well, you know, 10,000 cases a year.
But what people need to realize, he says, is that the market could be a lot bigger than that. What's helpful to kids could very well be useful in adult surgeries, too.
And what we need to do is figure out how we can connect the two and make them sort of symbiotic.
In other words, Dutta and others are learning how to be not just surgeons, but entrepreneurs. Their business will be nurturing these products along to the point where someone else will start making them. For Quest, I'm Amy Standen, KQED News.
Support for Quest is provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation, the David B. Gold Foundation, and the Dirk and Charlene Cabsonell Foundation.